Good morning, friends. Welcome to our program. Today we are going to be talking about chapter 5, verse 13.
Yeah.
Thank you, Lou. Good morning to you, Lou.
Good morning. How are we doing today?
Good, good. So we're going to take it a little slow as of today, at least for today, because I think we're at a point where I want everybody to be on the same page. And sometimes when I try to squeeze in too many verses in one episode,
right,
it feels to me like I'm rushing. And I'm sure it feels to you, the listener, that I'm rushing.
Yeah, the last couple episodes are very packed. There was a lot of information in there.
Very packed, yeah. Right. And you're right, Lou. This is very important stuff that I would like people to get a good grasp on, write it down if necessary, think about it, ask questions, because this is good stuff. And you need to be able to put your mind around it. So last time where we left off, was we were talking about different ways to do action, which is karma yoga, and doing action with a selfless, sacrificial attitude, where you're doing it not for selfish reasons and you're sacrificing for a higher ideal. That then purifies the impurities in your mind, is what we said, and then it prepares you for becoming a sannyasi, where you can get your mind in order to do various things that you need to quieten your mind. So although all of this sounds very theoretical, there's a method to this. And let me tell you what that message is. So first thing is, if you want to change the world, this room that I'm sitting in, if I want to clean it, for instance, sitting here and meditating isn't going to clean the room, right?
Yep.
Ain't going to clean this room no matter how much I meditate. I actually have to take physical action, get down on my hands and knees, get a bucket, some soap, water, sponge, and clean it. That's action. So remember, if I want to do something, change the world, whatever I need to do to change the world, you know, feed hungry people, help the homeless, I've got to do action. Meditating isn't going to help them. Okay, so that's point number one. Point number two, if I want to change myself internally, my mind, my thoughts, that isn't going to change by action. Well, let's take that with a grain of salt.
Yeah.
It is going to change to some extent, because if I do selfless action, it purifies my mind. So to that extent, there is a change. But for the most part, if I want to still my mind of thoughts, and we'll talk about this later today, to say our mind, our unconscious mind, being a psychiatrist, you know, Freud talked about the conscious mind, the unconscious mind, the preconscious mind, ego, superego, id, all of these things. But suffice it to say that there is one part of your mind that is up front, where if you ask me, did you have a cup of coffee today? I'm able to instantly tell you that yes, I did, or no, I didn't. Mm-hmm. Whereas if you ask me something from 5-10 years ago, I've got to basically close my eyes, especially at my age now. I got to close my eyes, go back and say 5-10 years ago, think about it, and then come back to you, because it's in a deeper segment of my mind.
Right.
Where does that unconscious thinking come from? To some extent, it comes from whatever I've learned in this life, and to some extent it comes from previous lives. So keep that in mind, because that's an important, very important thing that determines how you change yourself, because there are habits, there are thoughts that are there from previous lives, and habits and thoughts that you have from this life that you need to change. And no matter how much action you do, that's not going to change. That has to come with meditation. So mm-hmm. far, is that clear for
yes.
everybody? I hope it is.
Yep.
So if you want to get knowledge and understanding that the action that you do is not done by you, you have to give up the doership. So you keep thinking that it is you that is doing the action. You meaning the small you, the one or you that is identified with the body, the mind, the intellect, your personality, that's the small you. The you, which is the Atman, the real power behind you, the cosmos, the whole world that is within you, that is not doing the action. So keep that in mind. If you are not the doer, what is doing the action? This is a very important thing for us to remember and understand, that the person, the what is doing the action is what is known as prakriti. Your prakriti, if you remember, we talked about this hard drive that is within you, that is engraved, hard drive written on from many lives in the past, that your previous thoughts, your desires, and your actions gets written onto that hard drive. You're born with it, and you know how to do these things because it's already engraved in there. Mm-hmm. So there are musical prodigies, there are mathematicians that are born, there are people who are able to recite the scriptures at the age of two before they can barely talk. Where does all that come from? All of that comes from the prakriti, which is written many lives earlier. And each life, it becomes stronger and stronger. But in addition, let's say the poor child is born and he's born to a German family and he's learning German. The scripts of the German language, the ability to speak, is all written in that same prakriti this time. So he's also able to speak German in addition. So that if you want to change your knowledge and you want to change your thoughts, you have to transform your mind through knowledge. You have to change your thoughts. It's not going to change otherwise. So if you had a tape recorder inside your head, if you were able to, somebody were able to be able to listen to your thoughts, your habits, you would see that it's a repetition almost your entire life. If you have a hang up, something that you think about, your vasanas, any vasana, let's say you think of money, and your vasana is a desire for money. Mm-hmm. If you take the past, however old you are, years, other than the early childhood, those vasanas actually start showing themselves in the adolescence, much more so, because they're hard drive there. They come out in the childhood. Those drives are not so great, but they start to show themselves in early adolescence, become much stronger in later adolescence, and then just get stronger and stronger from there on in. But you will see that if you had to express those, people around you could hear your thoughts, see your habits, you would see that the majority of them, 90% of them, revolved around that main vasana that you had.
Right.
Whether it was desires of the flesh, of money, power, fame, beauty, attachment to your relatives, all of that again and again, again and again, every day, day after day, all through the day. Everything that you do and think of is that vasana that's coming up, okay? So understanding of those thoughts, when the basic understanding changes, the underlying thoughts change. Very important to understand. Without that knowledge, the underlying thoughts do not change. It takes a while, but it happens.
Right.
And it's not just on the surface, but it goes deep inside towards that unconscious that we were talking about before. And it changes our convictions, which have been gathered for many lives and in our past. And those convictions, that personality that we develop, is called a swabhava. Your personality, your swabhava, your convictions. Their outer nature that you see is what is known as the swabhava. And they have been gathered through many lives and throughout this present life. So our convictions determine who am I? And we say, in your own mind, you say, who am I? It's based on the swabhava, what you've been collecting. What's this world all about? Is it a friendly world? Is it, you know, you people say, I'm paranoid, a little bit paranoid, or he's a little bit paranoid. What's this world? All of that comes from there. Somebody who's guarded in that respect.
Right.
What do I want from this world? Who should I avoid, etc.? It's like a computer. It's been programmed, and it will behave exactly the way it has been programmed. You cannot change that unless you get knowledge. Have I explained all this,
yes.
Lou? Okay.
Yeah.
So our deep within, our unconscious carries the programming of all our previous lives. on a more superficial level, it carries the programming of this life. So what Krishna tells Arjuna is that to do karma yoga with an attitude of service and sacrifice, because you cannot change the programming of the unconscious or the subconscious mind. But by doing karma yoga with a sacrifice and selfless thing, we can go deeper and change the basic programming of the mind. So the basic ignorance of the self, we don't know who we are. We think I am a man, I'm a woman, right. I'm Hindu, I'm Christian, I'm Muslim, I'm peaceful, I'm angry. All of that is what we think we are. That is an impurity, because it's impure that is making us think that way. Our basic purpose, we were born for this, is to ultimately get to self-realization, to get to enlightenment. And each life we take, we are going further and further towards that, whether we like it or not. Just like evolution, Darwin's evolution, we're headed there.
Right.
So the basic ignorance of the self is the impurity that we have to get rid of. So just as, you know, we Hindus go to a temple, we take flowers. We pick them from the garden, or we buy them in the from this flower seller outside the temple. We give the flowers. And when we give it to the higher, to a higher ideal inside the temple, it changes our offering. We could take the same flower and put it in our hair. If I was a woman, I'd put it in my hair in India, and we wouldn't even give it a second thought. So that act of giving it to the temple with humility and taking whatever the priest gives us back as prasad, mm-hmm. or an offering that has been given back to me, has far greater meaning, because you're taking away the doership from that. So anything that you do selflessly as in a sacrifice to a higher power takes away the doership and therefore the confusion. How do you look at it as an example? Because I think that that may not have been that clear. Right, Lou? Yeah. Was it clear?
I'm open for an example. Yeah, let's try an example.
Okay. All right. So when you say God, people often sort of shrink back. They say, God, well, I don't believe in God. Well, there's no guy up there in the sky. There's no woman up there.
Right.
So let's say the totality of this power around us, the cosmos, the energy, the electricity around us. And whatever we do for that. And as long as you do it that way, your actions become very smooth. Imagine that I'm walking down New York, in New York City, mm-hmm. Times Square. Crowded, hundreds of people, not now during COVID times, but in the past, there would be hundreds of people walking up and down Times Square. And there's a TV cameraman standing over there, and he suddenly comes up to me or you and says, hey, I watched you walking the past 100 yards as you're walking here, and I'm looking for a person who walks ideally. Mm-hmm. You know, sir, your walk is just so perfect. The way you stride, the rapidity with which you move your feet, the way you put your heel down first and then your toes, and the way you move your arms, and everything is just perfect. And you say, oh, wow, me, perfect. My walk is perfect. Yeah, yeah, you. Could you do this for us one more time while I film you and all these people gathered here are going to watch you? Go back to where you started from and start walking.
Yeah.
Now what happens to my walk? Are you kidding? It's no longer as smooth.
Right.
I'm self-conscious about the way I'm walking. I'm saying, is this the right way now? Something I've done my whole life very easily, walking. If somebody tells me I'm watching you, all these people are watching you, a million people are watching you on TV, and it's going to be shown on that screen up there on Times Square, what happens to my walk? It falters.
Right.
It's not the same. I cannot perform as well. The flower that I put in my hair, as opposed to giving it to a higher power, any sacrificial action, any karma I do that I'm doing for somebody else comes across far better than if there's a doership and pride and I-ness attached to it.
Right.
Okay. So, and that applies to almost everything, even breathing, such an automatic thing, but to a certain extent involuntary, but to a certain extent voluntary. That's the one thing, as opposed to the heart, which is totally involuntary, or digestion, which is totally involuntary.
It's funny you bring up breathing, because one of the old golf examples, if you want to mess someone up playing golf, right before they swing, you ask them, do you inhale or exhale on your backswing? And it's something they never think about, but you put the thought in their mind and it comes to the conscious level and just messes them all up.
Messes them up. So you're right. You know, so here, if somebody were to say to me, you know, same thing as I was describing the New York, that, wow, your breathing is just perfect. Yeah. Oh, my goodness. Your inhalation, your exhalation is just, can you do that one more time? My breathing gets all messed up because I'm now conscious of my breathing. So that's the impurity. We all walk, but we are not intensely conscious of the action itself. So what you don't want to do is to be intensely conscious of the action itself, like running down a flight of stairs, right? I automatically just take 2-3 steps at a time as I'm running down or up. But if I'm conscious of it, I'll trip and fall. Intensely aware of the sense of doership, saying, I am walking, I am breathing, I am going down the stairs, and attached to the result.
Right.
Again. These are all important things if you're able to write these down, folks, as I do. I hope I walked well. I hope I am walking well. I hope they're looking at me.
So how far in front of your mind your prakriti is and your vasanas can disturb your connection with the higher being, you know, the Atman. It gets in the way of your attachment to that.
Right. The prakriti is what is bringing out the desires and the vasanas and the wish to do certain things. Mm-hmm. The mind is the one that races to the future to say, what will be the result of this walking or breathing? My face is going to be on TV all over the world because people are going to see me. And what are they going to see about this guy who walks perfectly? All of those thoughts. Yep. And in the past, to say worries, last time they did this, I messed up pretty bad. Am I going to mess up again? Worries about the past, anxieties about the future. The mind is no longer in the present. It is racing to the future, and it is whatever happened in the past. So keep your mind, like in mindfulness, keep your mind on the present. Do what you have to do in a sacrificial manner. So karma yoga means acting in such a way that we think our actions, our body is doing the action, is only an instrument in the hands of God. I'm not doing it. The body is doing it as an instrument in the hands of God. So a person who is a karma yogi, a true yogi, a sannyasi, you tell him to do the same thing. I'm putting a TV camera here. You walk, and we're going to film you. He just closes his eyes, prays, and says, God, I'm walking for you, or God, you are doing the walking. His mind is not on the TV cameras or anything else. He just keeps saying the name of God as he's walking, and his walking is just the same as it was before. Mm-hmm. So we realize soon that there is a much greater power out there that dictates our actions. This is an important thing that we have to remember, that even in the Gita, Krishna says to Arjuna, if you don't want to fight, I'll do the fighting for you. He says, you just pretend, go through the motions of acting and everything else I'll do for you. Mm-hmm. Now, we've already said that the Atman does no action. You say, wait, he's saying he's going to do the action? That doesn't make sense. We've said before that the Krishna says, if you dedicate yourself to me fully, your actions, don't worry about your needs. I will take care of your needs. And this happens not just in the Hindu religion, in the Gita, but also in other scriptures where it is said that if you dedicate your services to me, I think Christ may have said that, your needs will be completely taken care of. So this is what Krishna says. Now, you may say, well, I thought you said Atman or Krishna doesn't do anything. You do it. So there is some level of a thought that we have to give there, because is he really saying that he's going to take care of it, or is he that confident that once you think that you're going through the motions of fighting, your prakriti that has done this for your entire life and your previous lives says, I've got a sword in my hand, I'm fighting, I've trained for this for the last 40 years, I am going to continue fighting, and you just automatically do it. And in your mind you say, see, I'm not doing it, a higher power is doing it.
Yeah.
So this is what he says, that you start the war and you go through the motions of fighting and I will take over. Similarly, just like with walking or breathing, this happens automatically. And the people around you, the world around you, everything starts acting synergistically with your actions if those actions are without greed and without selfish motive. So if your actions are with greed or with selfishness, then it is antagonistic to the world. The world shies away from you.
Right.
If it is sacrificial, if it was for other purposes, the world actually joins in with you. It's similar to eating some food that is harmonious to your digestive system, right?
Yep.
A food that you know is good for you. As you eat it, your digestive powers from your saliva starts getting secreted because your body says, I love this. This is good. It's good for me. Your juices get secreted. The thing gets automatically digested very easily, as opposed to something that is not good for you. Your system sort of pushes it away. It's not synergistic with the body. So with all of that, let's get to verse 13, chapter 5. So verse 13 says, mentally renouncing all actions, meaning he says, I'm not the doer. Whatever actions I do, I'm renouncing those to a higher power. And being self-controlled, controlling your senses, the self-realized person rests happily in the city of nine gates, neither acting nor causing to act. So the self-realized person rests in the body, which is the city of nine gates. Why nine gates? Because it says the body, our bodies, have nine openings. Two eyes, two nostrils, two ears, that's six, mouth, seven, one aperture for the urinary system, and one aperture for the feces. So those are the city of nine gates. Now, that's the city. Who are the citizens of that city? Who lives in there? The sense organs, all the sense organs and the organs of perception, they live in there. The organs of action live in there. The mind lives in there. The intellect lives in there. But who's the king? Who's the king of that city? The king of that city is the Atman, right?
Right.
The self. Each one of us has that. Without a king, your body's dead. That city's closed down. Atman lives in there and is the king. And as long as the king is there, everything keeps moving. But what does the king do? The king does nothing, just gives ability for everything else to function, right? We go to a nice city in Europe somewhere and everything is working harmoniously, everything is good. We say, wow, the government here is nice.
Yeah.
The police force is working, everything is good. So a jnani reaches self-realization. The Atman that he has realized, the same Atman is now functioning from that same body. But the same physical body, but in all actions that are done, the Atman is now a silent witness. The Atman renounces all actions, doesn't think that I'm doing it.
Right.
He remains a witness, totally dispassionate and disinterested in the happenings around him. Why? Why does he become dispassionate? What makes him aware of certain things that you and I are not? And the example that is given in the scriptures is that assume that you're dreaming and you're having a very exciting dream and you have hopes and wishes and you're going to get something that you have been waiting for, you're very excited to get it. But a part of you goes inside that dream, if that were possible, while you're still asleep, and says, hey, Lou, that's just a dream, man. If you could believe that, if you believe this thing and you say it says, that's just a dream, don't believe it. Part of you would say, get away from here. Right now, I'm in the best part of my dream. I want this.
Right.
Get away from here. But if you were successful in being woken up and you woke up and you realized it was a dream, what would your attitude be towards that thing that you were excited? You might say, wow, that was a good dream. It was nice.
Right.
But you would immediately start to focus on what time is it? Should I get up? There's time to get dressed. Oh, I'm late. I was having a good dream, but I better hurry up and shower. And the dream is discarded until you start to think of it just for the fun of it.
Right.
That's what a self-realized person recognizes his life to be. His self-realized person says, you know what? I have now realized that this life, this whole thing, everything that I've been hankering for until I became self-realized was nothing. Money, power,
right,
pleasures for my senses, all of that were for naught. I don't need it. It's just a dream. It's just an illusion.
So you give up your attachments to it and your attachments to the opposites, right?
Right. So the Atman resides in the body in the same way as a person that says about somebody else's body. If a dog is walking past me, I look at the dog and I say, the dog is walking. He's walking pretty fast. I don't say that that's me walking.
Right.
Similarly, the Atman that's living inside us, each one of us, recognizes that it's, we don't recognize it. We think it's us. This is my body walking, my body eating, my body looking at this. Atman says, this is not me. And that's what a self-realized person recognizes. And this city of nine gates comes from one of the Upanishads, which is known as the Kathopanishad. And the Upanishads also describe two things called Shreya and Preya. Shreya is the path of righteousness, and Preya is the path of pleasantness, something that you like.
Yeah.
So it says, don't go the path of Preya, which is the pleasantness. Go the path of Shreya, which is whatever is right. So there was one story that somebody told about a self-realized master, a Swami, who had been riddled with an illness, which was a terminal illness, and he knew about it. He was in a lot of pain, and the doctors would come and give him medications and injections. And one day, his student went up to him. I don't remember where I heard this or who I heard it about or the name of the Swami, but said, Swamiji, how are you? Because the doctor had just visited last night. And he said, how are you? He says, me? I'm fine. And he says, you're fine? Yeah, I'm fine. And he says, but we saw the doctor's car here yesterday, came to the ashram. He says, oh, that. He came to treat my body. Yeah. The body is falling apart. But I'm fine.
Yeah.
Right? So the self-realized person recognized that he was so much into it that when somebody asked him what he is, he says, I'm fine. Mm-hmm. And I am fine because I'm just going to give up this body and come back to a different body. He's to that level of, whereas I, if this were up to us, we'd say, oh, my, this hurts, my, that hurts, my, right, that hurts, all of that. So, so to summarize that, we're saying that body, mind, and intellect is an instrument in the hands of a higher power once the mind gives up the ego. So lastly, the non-karma yogi, somebody who's selfish, is known as an ayukta. Ayuktaha is doing the actions for selfish reasons. The propelling force in him is his kama, or desires, an intense attachment to the result of his actions, which is the fruit. That happiness, when you get the fruit, you remember we talked about bondage. If you don't remember, friends, please go back. We talked about bondage because the desire for this fruit just keeps coming back again and again, right, not just in this life and this instance, but also into your prakriti for future lives. That bondage binds you. And these addictions are created, which creates a constant disturbance in the mind. Now, all this time we've been talking about actions, habits, thoughts. We're going to be talking about the mind. The constant disturbance in the mind, daytime, nighttime, in every relationship. You know, you say, my boss is such a pain. When he leaves the work, goes home, says, my spouse, he is just such a horrible person. He's this. Constant noise. There's no peace.
Right.
Then when we do karma yoga with an attitude of selflessness and sacrifice, the mind gets calmer. Then you can meditate and become self-realized. But how does an enlightened person live? In this chapter, chapter 5, the second last verse and the third last verse, we will talk about a little bit about how to do meditation. And then chapter 6, we'll do a lot more about meditation. Mm-hmm. The enlightened person lives by renouncing the doership in every action, as I said before. There's no I. Just like heart beating or breathing, he renounces the I and he lives in the city of nine gates. That's what this verse is saying.
Right.
The ignorant person thinks of himself as the body. I'm a man, I'm a woman. That's his body. I'm unhappy, talking about the mind, the emotions. I'm intelligent, I'm not intelligent, talking about the intellect. I'm seeing things, I'm smelling things, I'm hearing things, talking about his senses. An average person identifies with these, whereas the enlightened person realizes he's living in the body, but is separate from the body. Mm-hmm. He looks upon his own body as if he were looking upon that dog that's walking by him.
Right.
So then the enlightened person, recognizing that every action that's done by his body is not done by the Atman. The Atman doesn't dictate how and when he should act and what it should do. So how does the body do that? The body does it by its prakriti. Lou, some years ago, I bought a Tesla.
Oh.
Tesla, for those, phenomenal car. But because I had to keep charging it, and those chargers were not available everywhere, I gave it up and went back to a gas guzzler that drives with petrol. But for those of you who might not be familiar with a Tesla, it is a totally 100% electric car that is run with computers, and it runs only when it's fully charged. When the electricity dies or is finished, the car stops.
Right.
And completely is just a mass of metal, doesn't do anything.
Right.
But when it's fully charged, you bring it home, you charge it in the garage, and you charge it, you start it up. Immediately, this computer goes on, this big, beautiful display on the front of the thing comes. And there's actually been on YouTube, you can see this, videos of people on the turnpike driving at 60 miles an hour, fast asleep at the wheel,
yeah.
The passengers. Have you seen that video?
Yeah.
Lou, did you see it?
Yeah.
Two people driving on the mass turnpike at 60 miles an hour, the driver's asleep, the passenger's asleep, and the car is going by itself. Now, the car has been programmed to drive a certain way. It actually can be programmed that if it knows that it's in the garage. How does it know that? By the GPS. That when you start it and you say, okay, go to the office, it says, okay, you've already taught me, my computer, that I have to back up for 15 feet, stop, put it in forward, drive at a 45-degree angle. It
right.
maneuvers around the driveway, gets onto the street, drives all the way to the office. It'll be too long for me to explain how it does that. But trust me when I say that the car knows its way, what speed, avoids other cars in a better way than even human beings, doesn't get into an accident, but drives itself to the destination that you've programmed the car to do. But without that electricity being charging the car wouldn't go anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
So the car is driving because of the computer that has been pre-programmed, but wouldn't be able to do it if the car were not charged.
Right.
Similarly, our bodies, our actions, everything that we do is because of our pre-programming on our prakriti from previous lives and from the current life, but does it because it's enlivened by the Atman. We may not realize that these actions that we're doing, we think we just decided to do it just now. We didn't do it just now. You didn't decide that just now. It has been pre-programmed in you for a whole many lives. So with that, we'll stop. Lou, thank you very much.
Yes. Fascinating. Good start.
The one verse. I think this is what I'm going to have to do now. Go slower, go more into depth. But from my listeners, be happy to hear from you for you to tell me if this format works or for me to cram in like four or five verses at the same time works better.
No, this is a big concept. So, this is important.
Yeah, there are important concepts coming up now as we get further and further into this Gita. So friends, thank you very much for joining us, and we'll see you next time.